enthusiastic hello there at the co-op. I spent the next 5 real minutes hiding in the natural soap aisle, checking to make sure I didn't have watercress in my teeth or a bloody nose or something else to incur such sarcasm from this otherwise pleasant-seeming human on a random Thursday afternoon. Chicago is in the Midwest, and yes, we're probably way nicer than New Yorkers, but don't get it twisted. We are still not making eye contact and saying hi to you while you measure out your buckwheat groats in the bulk section of the health food store. Lots of people are theoretically nice, but when you need them to jump your car's dead battery, they act like the text didn't go through. And that's fine. We big city folk understand that call me if you need help moving next week loosely translates to bitch, I dare you. But I might need a hand getting my firewood into the house, and it would be amazing to shout over the fence for Bill in his unironic cargo shorts to come over and give me one. Con, I can't be 100% sure these people won't call me a nigger to my face. Hey, remember that time I stopped in West Virginia in the borrowed Subaru my homegirl and I were driving across the country, and a little white child, no older than 8, amusing himself with a length of wire and an old flat tire, wiped the mayonnaise from the corners of his mouth just long enough to call me and my friend dirty nigger lesbians as we minded our own business, filling up our gas tank? That tiny guy lived in a small town. I was pretty shocked, since the last time I'd let her finger me had been in D.C., and I'm pretty sure she'd washed her hands after. So how could he possibly know what we'd been up to 3 states ago? Also, I had showered in Baltimore, so dirty might have been overstating it a bit. Disheveled I can handle, but dirty? Give me a break, Caleb. I've never had a fist fight with a baby before, but I briefly considered it before reminding myself that, one, jail is real, and two, in 10 years the coal mine would introduce him to karmic retribution better than I ever could. Pro, Frito casseroles. I didn't eat for 2 days so that I could spend all my Weight Watchers points for the week last night on a $19 octopus salad from Longman and Eagle. Would do again. I grew up eating the kind of box trash you heat up and pour milk in for dinner. Macaroni and cheese, hamburger helper, imitation tricks. Poor people food is my food. Banging a couple of cans together over a shallow Pyrex dish before sprinkling some noodles and cheese on it, then baking it for 20 minutes at 350 degrees is like tugging a threadbare thrift store sweater onto my stomach, a warm, comestible hug. I love all that homestyle shit. Casseroles and bundts and cobblers and sheet cakes and rolls. Recipes that require Crisco and food coloring and have oxymoronic names like cheeseburger pie and lasagna soup. Recipes that cost $8 to make and last for a week. Con. What if I forget what ramps and garlic scapes and morels are? If I had to pick a favorite food to eat while sobbing over the kitchen sink, it would probably most definitely be beanie weenies. There is no greater sad joy than cutting up a dollar store hot dog and putting it in a simmering saucepan of Bush's honey-baked beans. To further illustrate the direness of my current situation, I should disclose that I am writing this while eating a frozen bean burrito that might not really be cooked all the way through. I can count the number of fancy meals I have in a month on one hand, but that doesn't mean I don't want the option of rejecting your invitation to go to them. Living in Chicago spoils you, because there are hundreds of places 15 minutes from wherever you happen to be at any given moment where you can find locally sourced, farm-to-table organic meals made by a chef who's probably been on TV. I might not take advantage of them as often as I do, say, Pizza Hut's two mediums for $6.99 deal. But the point is that if I wanted to, I could stick up a bank, steal an outfit from a person who doesn't wear pajamas as regular clothes, and order the lily bulb slash rambutan slash distillation of caviar lime at Alinea anytime I want. Yeah, right. I could never get in there. Pro, life would be so simple. I could wake up to the sound of crowing roosters or meth heads at sunrise, consume a platter of buttered carbohydrates, hitch up my overalls, and grab my watering can from the shed. That would be a dream. I'm sick of news and buying stuff and trying so desperately to have fun all the time. I just want to watch old Catfish episodes on the couch and record videos of Helen's cat snores. Con, but what if I get bored? Please ignore that I have shunned all available social and physical activity on this lovely Friday evening in order to sit in my darkened apartment, bathed in the blue light of this computer screen, while I gaze dolefully at a YouTube video of Justin Bieber singing karaoke in a car. Boredom is a fallacy in my tiny life. I have a fancy phone with lots of apps on it and relatively decent LTE coverage. I haven't been truly bored since 2007. And even back then, there were televisions and books and MySpace and pets. But if I wanted to go out and get into something fun, I theoretically could put a jacket on and go do it. Pro, it's just so goddamn beautiful. I'm tired of looking at stomped-out cigarettes floating in puddles and rotting old food stinking up the sidewalk. I am getting so fucking touchy lately, and I know the problem is me, that Americans have the unalienable right to fill their potholes with dirty diapers and the slimy celery they forgot was in the produce drawer. I would never deign to take that away from anyone. I'm sure nothing feels better than dropping a used Kleenex 3 feet to the right of a public trash can. But I'm growing tired of grimy cabs and the E. coli factory that is our stretch of Lake Michigan. I could stand to have some trees and weather in my life. I mean, I don't really want to touch nature, but I do sometimes like looking at it. Con. Nature is terrifying. Last summer, Mavis and I spent a weekend in a remote hippie cabin in the woods. It is the plot of every horror movie you've ever seen. White person convinces black person to pack up his or her hair grease, wave cap, and reparations money in the hopes of spending a long, relaxing weekend in vaguely authentic-sounding pseudo-Native American word, lake, falls, island, or coast, doing white people things like lying in hammocks and eating fresh apricots. Black person dies before you've even made a dent in your popcorn. I had my sunglasses, my car snacks, and my road trip music. I was ready to meet Mavis in the woods. I plugged the address into the GPS on my phone and waited for the pixels and gigabytes or whatever to plot my route. Finally, Siri heaved a long, weary sigh. Bitch, are you sure? What? I restarted my phone and re-entered the address. Another pregnant pause. Samantha, there are no black people within 100 miles of this destination, bleat the computerized voice. Would you instead like directions to the Essence Fest? I think Mary J. Blige is performing. That was last week, I shrieked, pounding the address into the phone again. Just tell me how to get to this country shit. Another long pause as she calculated directions. I watched a map slowly appear on the screen, my course charted in blue. Anything in the whole town comes up missing over the next 3 days, and your black ass is going to jail, Siri warned nastily, and I threw the phone into the back seat. I spent 3 hours on tranquil highways and hilly back roads littered with raccoon and deer carcasses, vainly attempting to eat a sandwich like a civilized person while also dodging families of ducks as they toddled across the unmarked road. I passed dozens of tiny houses set back from the highway with ancient cars and boats rusting under the sun on their front lawns. I could smell the methamphetamines cooking in the air. "In a quarter mile, turn left at the cow," Siri cackled viciously. "In 200 feet, make a slight right at the horse onto a dirt road, and try not to get mauled by a bear for those Fig Newtons hidden in your backpack, stupid." I could have died out there, for real. I am on the precipice of abandoning my whirlwind single-person existence for what is essentially a trust fall into my new relationship, but I cannot envision my life in a crib that has stairs, or a crib with more than 3 rooms, or a crib that has well-meaning neighbors who drop by without giving you a heads up to take out the trash and hide your prescriptions prior to their arrival. I currently live across the hall from a person who, seemingly unprovoked, screams bloody murder, and upstairs from a person who sings arias in a lovely tenor at hours and decibels that regularly make me want to kill myself. Those people are referred to as Screaming Woman and Opera Dude, respectively. I am literally never going to talk to them. I will never know their real names. See also Smooth Jazz Guy and Bedhead Lady with Obvious Cats. If I walk into the building and see someone headed toward the elevator, I idle near the mailbox until I hear the gate slam shut, then hustle over to it before some equally awkward stranger comes home and ruins my meticulously executed plan for riding the elevator up to my floor in peace. I do my laundry at 5 on Monday mornings because I'm generally very polite, and 4 years ago I was forced into 20 minutes of witty banter with a decently hot gentleman while trying to hide behind my back a pair of underwear that needed pre-treating. One night, Smooth Jazz Guy and I exited our apartments at the same time, and I froze at my end of the hall, pretending I couldn't possibly figure out which of the 4 keys on my key ring was the one that locked my door. I could just feel him waiting to say something about Peebo Bryson to me, and once I could finally stall no longer, I walked toward him as he exclaimed, "Hey, fellow black, I never knew you lived here. Come by for a drink sometime." What's worse than being stung to death by thousands of bees? Sitting in an apartment adjacent to yours, balanced precariously on a stranger's bed while sipping a glass of Chivas Regal and listening to Najee, or sitting in an apartment adjacent to yours, balanced precariously on a stranger's bed, sipping a glass of Chivas Regal and listening to Najee. I am never, ever doing that. And it has nothing to do with him. I'm sure he's charming and hospitable and has an incredible selection of Take 6 records. But yo, I would rather be mauled by that revenant bear than strike up a friendship with someone who would inevitably do horrible things like knock on my door or sign for my FedEx packages. I have been alone for so long that the idea of community is legit terrifying to me. I'm anxious and easily flummoxed, and I don't want anyone seeing the maxi pads in my trash or how many books I leave next to the toilet. I don't want people to know that there's only bologna and Crystal Light in my fridge. Seriously, I don't want to have to explain why I have so many bottles of hand soap on each sink. I like variety, okay? And half-melted Diptyque candles scattered everywhere. I said I like some goddamn variety. The idea of being part of a community is daunting. Despite how open I am on the internet, I am fiercely private IRL, which is to say that I am often a hermit because I never want anyone to see my actual pores or clothes. I have grown increasingly uncomfortable with large groups of people, but this isn't really that. This is more like, why would you ever want to come inside where I live? Or, I just don't get why we have to talk in your living room when there are dozens of perfectly good restaurants 5 minutes from here. But this summer I am moving to a neighborhood like one on TV, where I have to keep a bra on all the time because kids are always just letting themselves in for impromptu play dates. And you never know who might be dropping by with a bag of extra grapefruits from their CSA box or some vegan Korean food fresh from the farmer's market. That very specific example happened once. Thank you, Sarah Hill. In Chicago, I have this tiny little universe that has a deadbolt and a door buzzer. But you'd never come over anyway because there's nowhere to park, and Opera Dude really does get in the way of meaningful conversation a lot of the time. However, in Michigan, we have giant windows with no blinds, white people, a skateboard ramp in the driveway, and a tire swing hanging from the big oak tree in the yard. And do I even need to finish this sentence? I will never be able to just let my tits hang ever again. I tell anyone who is ever interested that my ideal long-term romantic relationship is one in which my partner and I have separate apartments in the same building, or in buildings across the street from each other, or in buildings on opposite sides of town, or in buildings on opposite sides of the state, or in buildings in different states altogether. I have very little interest in joint cohabitation. Seriously, almost none, save for the fact that if a person had a big television and was willing to pay for premium cable and give me 70-30 ownership of the remote, then I would maybe consider it. I mean, come on. Hers and hers houses? Such a jam. Up until now, Mavis and I have spent 2 years in different states, and that has been a dream. 95% of the time I can watch Love and Hip Hop without pausing every 5 seconds to explain the difference between Young Jock and Little Scrappy. I can use a spoon to cut pizza. I can sleep like a fucking starfish spread across the bed. It's glorious. I can keep my shit together for 5%. I can keep the laundry folded, the dishes put away, the lumps fluffed out of the duvet, and the bathtub spotless for 5% of the time. 5% Sam buys fresh-cut tulips and displays them in stone vases. 5% Sam throws out the expired yogurts and keeps chilled rosé in the fridge. 5% Sam is the kind of person you want to live with. But 95% Sam is going to be a problem. I'm not sure what I'm going to do about all my gross habits. My cans of Mexicorn, my 17 Q-tips after every shower, my irregular mopping, my dresser covered with pill bottles, my cat food everywhere, my cat hair everywhere, my pile of indiscernible black laundry, my dirty Birkenstocks scattered in corners far and wide. My dinner in bed. These people sit down to breakfast, lunch, and dinner at the table, and I will literally die if they expect me to do that. By the way, who the fuck eats actual lunch? How can I really hide who I am from these people who only know a sanitized version of me if they are everywhere I am all the time? I'm going to have to start a swear jar at work in the few months before I pack my valuable belongings into 1.5 trash bags and move them to a house with children running around it. No bullshit. I got to figure out a way to stop saying bitch so much before one of these shorties rolls up on me while I'm cussing Helen out for being such a vile little piece of garbage and runs away screaming to tattle on me. Every morning when that naughty, scamp bites me awake at 5 o'clock, I'm really going to have to grit my teeth and say, good morning, cat, instead of, I'm euthanizing your bitch ass today, you fucking bitch, like I normally would. I don't know, man. I'm just dubious of spending the majority of my awake minutes with someone I show my privates to, who also needs to know how much money I am making and is keeping a mental checklist of all the times I forget to drag the recycling to the curb. And also being in a town without real bagels. People are boring and terrible. I am boring and terrible. My funny runs out, my cute runs out, my smart sometimes hiccups, my sexy wakes up with uncontrollable diarrhea. I have an attitude and a sharp edge. I'm impatient. I like the whole bed. I hate anyone touching and moving my haphazardly arranged possessions all the time. Plus, I'm a downright horrible sharer, and I can't guarantee that I won't write my name on something in the refrigerator I don't want her to eat. These quirks, if I'm being generous, have had 36 years to consolidate into one giant mass of mine. How do you get over that? Am I going to need hypnosis? There's so much single person stuff I still need time to do. And I know you're all fuck other people, but I'm over here like, nah, my dude. I mean, eat lunch meats rolled up in a tortilla because I don't have any real bread while watching Jackie Brown on my laptop. Or try on all of the lipsticks in my apartment while taking a series of poorly lit selfies I'm never going to show anyone. Again. I do so much shit I don't want anyone else to see or know about that I never want to have to explain to another human being. And I want to keep doing them. I enjoy listening to the Young Turks really loud in the bathroom while I take a long shower, then spending a considerable amount of time moisturizing my various parts. This is not a bad thing. It's not even a particularly creepy thing, but it is the kind of thing that might be weird when other people are living in your house, waiting for that bathtub, wondering what's taking you so long and who your imaginary talking friends are. I want to still have time to sit staring at the wall for hours with both my headphones and the television on, daydreaming about what I would wear to the Golden Globes, as if I'd ever have a reason to go to the Golden fucking Globes. I want to watch porn by myself, and movies by myself, and Blackish by myself. Basically, anything I ever want to see is best enjoyed alone, under a blanket, with a hot water bottle propped against my back, and no other noise whatsoever. I like to dance to M.I.A. while I cook, if you understand cook to mean make food that I sample so frequently during its preparation that the end result is already leftovers. I can't do that horrifying shit if I live with some foxy lady and her kids. I mean, really, do you think she's going to be supine across my freshly changed bed linens looking hot and awesome and still want to rip me out of my chonies after watching me cry for hours at videos of people surprising each other? The answer is no. No, she will not. But I still want to do it. So does that mean this next phase is doomed? Because I can keep my apartment clean and safe and inviting for a night, for a weekend, for maybe even a week, but that day-to-day shit ain't happening. I am obviously destined to die alone, in giant panties that come up to my chin, with half a gallon of pasta sauce I haven't even added oregano to, partially digested in my stomach, mouth frozen in a silent fuck. 13 questions to ask before getting married. Mavis and I are getting married next month, and she just sent me this article from the New York Times like, LOL, isn't this hilarious? But jokes on that hoe, I'ma answer this shit without telling her and put it in the fucking book. I see you, bitch. 1. Did your family throw plates, calmly discuss issues, or silently shut down when disagreements arose? The man whose ashes I ate punched me in the face once for incorrectly washing a cast iron pan. So I guess that qualifies as throwing plates. But here is the thing. In my haphazard and inconsistent childhood, I was never living with any person long enough to ever establish any sort of real patterns. In the Cooper-Irby household, there was no such thing as, say, Meatloaf Mondays or Christmas Eve at Grandma's. And thank God for that, because my skinny, mean grandma would have set a plate of sardines and grits out for Santa and embarrassed my ass because homeboy was looking for cookies. I come from a fractured group of individuals who don't even all have the same last name, let alone any traditions. But once, my dad hit my mother in the head with a frying pan during an argument, so I guess that's how we get down. Maybe you should pick fights in a room with a lot of soft stuff in it. Hold up. I think I finally recognize a pattern. 2. Will we have children? And if we do, will you change diapers? Hello, patriarchy. I'm not having any babies. I want to give a smug answer about how much money and free time I have because I still don't got kids. So much. So much. And if you don't get that reference, go do your Googles. But let's talk about my real fears when it comes to my parenting a child. 2A. I pretty much stopped learning things after high school. Now, don't get me wrong. I read shit all the time. Even smart shit like Vanity Fair and The New Yorker, even though it seems like it takes me 4 months to get through a single issue. I watch Rachel Maddow and listen to a couple of podcasts when I remember they exist, but I don't know how to do trigonometry. And I cannot remember anything from a single history class I've ever taken. So unless 10th graders are being tested on BuzzFeed listicles and how to keep track of all the bogus email addresses you've created to sign up for multiple 30-day title trials and ModCloth discount codes, I do not know anything of use to a modern-day child. I can show a kid how to make a satisfying meal out of stale saltines and leftover aloo gobi, but that is basically it. I wasn't parented past the age of 13, and it shows. I once blew a car engine because I had no idea what an oil change was. I didn't even have a coat last winter. I just doubled up hoodies and wrapped a scarf the size of a tablecloth around my shaved head. In Chicago. I have a lot of what polite people call life experience, which is a nice way of saying I possess skills like can find a cafe with free Wi-Fi blindfolded and able to spot an overdue bill from a glance at the back of the envelope. 2B. I hate going outside, and talking to people can be excruciating. I'm depressed, man. Lexapro gave me night terrors, so I stopped taking it, and haven't yet tried an alternative because I value my newfound ability to sleep through the night. I didn't have outdoor parents, and I'm not all that mad about it. You say, walk in the park. I hear, runny nose, itchy eyes. You say, picnic in the grass. I hear bugs stinging and birds pooping on me. And exactly what am I supposed to do during soccer practice every week or during Girl Scouts? Have you ever listened to people with kids talk to other people with kids? It is a strange and confusing language that I don't ever want to understand. I don't ever want to listen to two people debating over whether school lunches should be non-GMO. I have absolutely zero opinions on things like that. Also, I would buy my kid 100 TVs just to get him right on up out of my goddamn face. So many things that people have to do to make good, well-rounded people out of their children are such a hassle for the parent. If she has to learn to play the cello, I have to buy the cello, find the instructor, and drive her to the lessons. Not to mention the half hour every afternoon I have to subject myself to living in a house with a child terribly playing the cello. And sure, I would probably get a lot of reading done, squashed behind the wheel of my sensible mid-sized crossover vehicle in the parking lot behind the ice skating rink to avoid gossiping with the other moms about which of our standout left wings will be arrested first for assault. But then I'd be the type of person who was forced to purchase something called a mid-sized crossover vehicle. We're talking a minimum of 16 years that I would be responsible for taking a young, defenseless creature out into the wild and protecting her from people who say damaging shit like, "Aren't you a pretty princess?" Years of talking on the phone to women named Caitlin who want to make sure I know that my snack for the slumber party has to be gluten and sugar and peanut free. Years of neighbor children being forbidden from crossing the threshold of my home because I let my son eat microwave snacks while talking on his personal cell phone and playing murder games on the computer in front of the television while I lie on the floor under the dining room table with an ice pack on my head with strict orders for him not to interrupt me unless the house catches fire. And even then, what the fuck am I going to do? Call 911, you stupid kid. I could go on. I could add another 296 things to this list and still not even scratch the surface of why my having a child is a bad idea. The first of which is that you already have some, and if your white kids were to gang up on my black kid, I would have no problem starting a race war in our home. I can see it now. I come home from the bar where I spend my afternoons crying and wishing I had made different choices in my life to find white one and white two playing slave auction or some other horrible game with my baby. I burn the house down with all of us in it, screaming whatever lines I can remember from Django Unchained at the top of my lungs. So yeah, we're not going to adopt. 3. Will our experiences with our exes help or hinder us? Well, I can't be hindered by dead people, so I'm all good. Just playing. Wishing someone were dead doesn't make it real, Sam. 4. How important is religion? How will we celebrate religious holidays, if at all? I was raised in church. And you tried to hold my hand in the middle of that one service I took you to, the one during which my sister led the choir in a rousing rendition of a song I'm pretty sure was called Jesus Does Not Like Lesbians. So I'm confident in saying that you've never been to church a day in your life. If I had to declare a religion for a census, I'd probably choose agnostic, because the parts of the Bible I've read are just like a really boring soap opera that's dragged on for too many seasons. But I refuse to believe it's a coincidence that when R and I broke up in the front seat of his Pontiac, Breakdown by Mariah Carey came on the radio at the exact moment he was avoiding eye contact and mumbling, "I don't think this is gonna work out, dog." To which I very earnestly responded, in song, "I be feeling like you bringing me down, taking me around, stressing me out. I think I better go and get out and let me release some stress, in time with the music." If that isn't the universe intervening to keep me from beating a motherfucker to death with a broken window scraper, I don't know what is. I sat there for the last minute and 47 seconds of the song, with the door cracked, and sang my lungs out while R provided backing vocals before I got out. And then we never spoke again. Look at God. Even though I don't care about organized religion, I still feel some type of way when people who weren't forced to sit in stiff ruffles and too tight patent leather Mary Janes for 4 hours every Sunday morning get to just, you know, buy an Easter basket without having done any of the work. Those jelly beans and Cadbury eggs were my annual reward for memorizing the 23rd Psalm and not falling asleep during Sunday school. And yet somehow, there are kids who get to sleep in every weekend and have never had to identify Bible passages from memory who get the same number of jelly beans I do. It doesn't even matter, but I resented it. How did you earn those Christmas presents if you've never had to spend hours after school making a life-size diorama of the manger that will be displayed in the church's vestibule 3 weeks past the time it should have been carted down to the basement? Here's how we're going to celebrate holidays. Sunday mornings, I'm going to walk around yanking curtains open at the crack of dawn, singing Victory is Mine and cooking eggs and bacon while bumping the gospel station at top volume. Then I'll rush you to get dressed because we need to get to service in time to get my favorite seat behind Sister Augustine. We're going to leave our phones at home, get to church at 10:30 on the dot, tithe our combined 20%, kneel before the pastor during altar call, during the good word, then go home at 4 to eat dinner and watch some wholesome TV, Touched by an Angel or some shit. After many months of this, then and only then will you have earned the right to call that dried up spruce the cats keep launching themselves into a Christmas tree. 5. Is my debt your debt? Would you be willing to bail me out? Bail you out of what? Jail? Yes, of course. Especially since I like to keep a bail bondsman on the payroll at all times, just in case. The smartest decision I have ever made in my entire dumb life was dropping out of college. Other than a few early mistakes that are being excised from my virtually non-existent credit file every year, why did I ever agree to have a home phone with a roommate who ran up $700 in international calls? I don't have a single crushing financial obligation. No student loans, no tax liens, no baby mama snatching up half my check. And see, the way my money is set up, your debt is going to have to be yours, champ, unless I get to claim that master's degree, too. This is not to say that I won't lavish you with gifts and pay for exotic vacations to places in America that have large black populations, but I'm not filing my taxes jointly ever. First of all, I like to do that work on the internet and keep it moving. I saw you sitting at the dining room table with your old-timey visor and graphing calculator, adding up expenses and sorting through receipts, and yeah, I'm never going to do that. It relaxes me to think that by paying the most possible taxes, I'm keeping my karma right, so just let me live with that delusion. Second, I want to have a secret bank account for emergencies like Miu Miu sunglasses and last-minute reservations at Maud's, and I'm pretty sure you don't live like that. You pay off your credit card balance every month, and none of your bills are behind, so shouldn't I really be asking this of you? I will give you whatever you need, provided that you catch me after my direct deposit clears, but before the Old Navy coupon codes hit my inbox. If you need money the same day Lane Bryant does their semi-annual bra sale, you better wake up early in the morning to ask me for it, because as soon as I wipe the sleep out of my eyes, I'ma be clickety-click clacking. Do you know how expensive keeping my nipples off my kneecaps is? So do what you can to plan your emergencies around sale season. 6. What's the most you would be willing to spend on a car, a couch, shoes? I wear one pair of shoes, one pair only, every day, unless it's snowing. And even then, I change out of my boots and back into my one pair of shoes as soon as I'm safely out of the elements. I have one pair of Finn Comfort Augustas. They cost $375 a pop, and I replace that pair annually. Who knows if I'll remain faithful to you, but I will never cheat on these perfect shoes ever. They come from a place in the suburbs called Waxburgs, where a gentleman named Irving measures my feet and watches me walk and forbids me from ever having another pair of flip-flops cross the threshold of my home. I'm not trying to put too fine a point on it, but these jams changed my life. If they went up to $500, I'd still buy them. I might have to cancel my Spotify to work them into the budget, but it can be done. I've already bought a couch for you, and that couch was $900. So, $900. I'm going to buy a car this year, and it's going to be great. I have never before purchased a car from a reputable dealership, the kind of place where the salesmen wear ties and offer you water while they roll their eyes at your credit score before offering up some loan shark contract that involves putting up your firstborn child or the deed to your house as collateral. All of my rusted-out Matchbox cars were purchased from somebody's dying grandma or from tiny lots where you can pay for your new Chevy with a combination of expired food stamps and lottery tickets. So now that I am an adult who is going to be living in a house with a driveway, I am going to buy a big black truck with a booming system and shock absorbers so I can silently weep as I float over the potholes without disrupting so much as an eyelash. I'm going to glide into the drive-thru, effortlessly lowering my childproof window to whisper my fried chicken order directly into the mic, instead of dislocating my shoulder trying to roll the window down before shouting unintelligibly at the helpless person inside who can't understand why a person whose car is barely 3 inches off the ground wouldn't just bring her lazy ass inside. I will take every road trip and helm every carpool on brand new fully inflated tires, an iced coffee in every cup holder, while getting free oil changes every 3 months, because that's the kind of thing written into the fine print of a multi-page lease agreement rather than a bill of sale hastily scribbled on the back of an unpaid FedEx invoice. You know this is too specific not to be true. I don't care what it costs. I'm a grown-up lady who doesn't have any cartilage in her arthritic knees, and I deserve to have a car whose seat slides back electronically. No auxiliary cord? No problem, because the Bluetooth already connected to your iPod and Beyoncé's dulcet tones are soothing your weary eardrums before you've even fastened your seatbelt. In my old Escort, I used to have this little device that would play a Walkman through one of the staticky radio stations at either of the far ends of the dial. I would make a mixtape, put batteries in a portable cassette player, connect it to the adapter, set the dial to 88.2 or 107.8 or whatever, then cruise around to the barely audible strains of Essewa Man et al. For approximately 47 minutes before the batteries tapped out or the connection died. That is the story I need to tell when people ask me, how could you possibly be sad in earnest? 7. Can you deal with my doing things without you? In fact, I would prefer it. I like a lot of alone time, you know, for things like scrolling through the Ghibli website for 4 hours, trying on clothes in my mind, or plucking my chin whiskers while sobbing over that movie where Winona Ryder is dying from a heart tumor and Richard Gere is in love with her but somehow just can't stop fucking other people. So yeah, maybe I need to be alone as I process all that imaginary grief for the 97th time. I don't understand couples who do everything together. If I'm going to see you at home, I don't also need to see you while agonizing over which flavor of Hot Pockets to get. I would like to have my own relationship with the dry cleaner, thank you very much. Not smile off to the side while you guys have your familiar little light starch on the gray slacks morning banter. I'm going to the coffee shop you hate, so it can be my coffee shop. You're getting groceries from the white chick with dreadlocks over at the organic co-op? Well, fine. I'm going to get my provisions for the week at Target, along with a car battery, 6 light bulbs, a desk calendar, and a handful of Revlon lipsticks. I like having my own shit. The thing is, I have no idea how to exist within a family unit. Despite my efforts, I have never lived with a romantic partner before. The last time I shared a house with someone, we divided the light bill in half and wrote our names on our respective milks. I don't know how to coexist in a place where people don't scribble names on their food or hide their pharmaceuticals on the top shelf of the closet. I still live like I'm in a foster home, hiding my trash at the bottom of the can because I don't want anyone to know how many Little Debbie oatmeal pies I ate under the covers after dark. And I am still like, will she notice how much of this body wash I used? While tucking the bottle behind a bigger one for fear that you're going to yell at me about how I always use up the expensive shit. Forget being hit or kicked. The real terror of my childhood was tiptoeing around trying to disguise all the precious resources I was using up. Sometimes a person's damage is obvious. Yelling, violence, defensiveness. But in some cases, it looks like walking around with a plastic bag full of trash in your backpack when you didn't spend last night at home because of a baseless worry that someone will look through it and hold its contents against you. I am still learning that no one is going to mark the level of the shampoo before I take a shower so they'll know whether I use a squeeze, and that I don't have to hide my dirty clothes. However, I will put a password on my computers and shit. I know how you feel about unauthorized screen time. And also those naked pictures of you on my desktop. 8. Do we like each other's parents? Is this a trick question? My parents, as I can't stop reminding people, are dead. Which means you are one of the lucky people on this planet who never has to suffer through any of my mom's silent scrutiny of your potato salad. She would eat it, but she would not approve. Or humor my father as he not so secretly drinks every drop of cognac you have in that high cabinet where we keep the plates, yet gently berates you about how children in his house weren't allowed to whistle, let alone speak to him while looking him in the eye. He would fall asleep in the rocking chair while my mom washed all the dinner dishes and excused herself multiple times to anxiously smoke cigarettes in the driveway. And then she'd serve her contribution to the meal, a cake from a box mix baked in her finest cat-shaped mold. At some point in the evening, I would have to take you aside to explain that I was going to sell the children's piano to fund the latest of my father's harebrained schemes, but that he'd assured me that this one was going to be the one that finally paid back a return on my investment. There'd inevitably be a fight of some kind, resulting in your having to drive my sobbing mother home and my body-slamming an old-ass man in the middle of the TV room while your kids cower in fear in the kitchen. So I guess what I'm saying is that death can sometimes be pretty great. I will have to keep your parents at arm's length because yours is the kind of family that goes on extended vacations in the wilderness together. And I'm afraid that if they like me too much, they will expect me to go with, and I am doing no such thing. You get only one chance to drag me to the woods, and I already let you take me to that isolated cabin in the middle of nowhere for 3 days with no phone and no Wi-Fi. So see you when you get back. I can't remember the last time one of my sisters and I went to the grocery store together, and I can't think of anything less relaxing than revisiting a fight that began in 1993 while slowly developing a bacterial infection from a wet bathing suit. I imagine there are two types of orphans. People who can't wait to jump into a ready-made family or build their own from scratch, and the kind I am. Get your heartwarming holiday cards away from me ASAP. You know what I can do, since I don't have a mom anymore? right? I love big dicks in my pussy hole on the internet without worrying about getting a disappointed phone call immediately after. I haven't had to justify anything I have or haven't done to anyone in my whole adult life. P.S. It feels amazing. I also haven't had to suffer through a forced Thanksgiving dinner or Aunt Barbara's retirement party or Cousin Julie's baby shower. And sure, I have an iPad, but unless you let me stay in the car, your padre is totally going to be all for real, Samantha, and hit me with the I didn't raise you like this eyes. And the thing is, no, he did not. And I respect that mom's got a mom, no matter whose kid they're talking to. So I'm definitely not inviting your girl over for a bottle of, I don't know, what do moms drink? Sauvignon Blanc? Costco wine? So she can knit her eyebrows together in concern while waiting for me to offer up an explanation for why I wrote, LinkedIn is emailing people that today is my 14th anniversary at my job, but damn, I wanted to write my suicide note myself on Twitter this morning. 9. How important is sex to you? Is there such a thing as the opposite of important? Because that's what I would choose. Maybe this is the depression talking, or maybe years of masturbating with the most powerful vibrators on the market have broken my vagina. But at the end of a long day, the last thing I want to do is stand up more or put on clothes that someone else might find visually arousing. Hopefully, lesbian bed death is real and not another unattainable fantasy the internet has lied to me about, like poreless skin. 10. How far should we take flirting with other people? Is watching pornography okay? I used to bang this dude who was really into female bodybuilder porn. And while that's not necessarily my bag, because I like to watch soft, naked bodies jiggling like chocolate pudding on a spoon, I was totally down with it. I didn't do a single triceps curl for the entirety of that relationship either. I walked in on him jerking off to an ass like a library book, bouncing up and down on some shriveled steroid dick, then walked right out and down the block to Dragon Gate. Because listen, if he is getting what he needs from watching two Leviathans bang into each other like bumper cars while oozing streaky orange self-tanner, then I am just going to get these egg rolls and post up in the other room with a pile of magazines. I am partial to mature lesbian porn because I'm old. And while I would never call it lovemaking, that is exactly what I want to watch. I like watching two ladies, or men, with a few miles on them, kissing passionately on the mouth and having real orgasms. I am forever here for gratuitous cum shots and clenched ass cheeks thrusting away for 20 real minutes. How do they do that? But I have never been excited to watch two straight girls kiss like it's icky while plucking at each other's clitoris like a banjo string. I don't need soft music or a backstory, but I would very much like to believe that these people are both at least marginally attracted to each other and experiencing legitimate pleasure. Porn is a quick and easy way for me to release some tension through a vaginal sneeze without having to undo my bra or take my shoes off. And I will never stop watching it, especially now that it is free and I ain't gotta hide my sex DVDs at the bottom of my sock drawer when company comes. Sex is messy and exhausting, and if you'd like to masturbate alone while I am sleeping or watching sports, have at it. Flirting is one of my main forms of social currency. I don't mean actual gross hitting on people. But if your mom comes up to me at a reading, then I'm going to look deep into her eyes and say, "You look amazing in magenta, Margaret," without breaking my gaze. And she is going to swoon and buy 6 copies of my book and, duh, love me forever. I'm not kidding. Margaret is going to shout down the other members of her book club when they try to dismiss this trash as vulgar and disgusting. They might have a point. And storm out of Betsy's house in a cloud of Chanel perfume because I wrote, "I would love to toss your salad, girl," inside the front cover of her copy. Listen, I would never lead someone to think that I would actually want to have sex because yuck, see above. But everyone loves eye contact and eating butts. It's so weird to me that adults in committed relationships have a problem with something so seemingly innocuous as flirting. I would never expect you to walk around with a paper bag over your head to avoid catching the eye of a stranger, nor would I discourage your making friendly conversation with whomever you might encounter during the day. And look, if you needed to fuck somebody else, we could talk about it. People change, our desires evolve, and it feels foolish to me to expect that what you'll want 2, 5, or 10 years from now will be exactly the same thing that fills you up today. I mean, the way I feel about fidelity has evolved over the last 10 years of my life. It's a hard and fast rule that we don't apply to any other thing in our lives. You must love this show or book or food or shirt with unwavering fervor for the rest of your natural life. Could you imagine being forced to listen to your favorite record from before your music tastes were refined for the rest of your life? Right now, I'm pretty sure I could listen to Midnight Snack by Homeshake for the rest of my life, but me 10 years ago was really into acoustic Dave Matthews, and I'm not sure how I feel about that today. And yes, I am oversimplifying it, but really, if in 7 years you want to have sex with the proverbial milkman, just let me know about it beforehand so I can hide my LaCroix and half-eaten wedge of port salut. Milkmen always eat all the good snacks. 11. Do you know all the ways I say I love you? I guess so. But the most important one is that time I came home after an Amtrak ride from the pit of hell, and my pajamas were already laid out, and my night banana and half-full glass of room-temperature water were waiting on the bedside table for me. 12. What do you admire about me, and what are your pet peeves? Likes. You look real good in a pair of tight-ass jeans. You can eat more food than anyone I have ever met, and I'm pretty old. Your laugh. That time you dropped your credit card at a toll booth was pretty hilarious. You don't stink, even though you wear homemade deodorant. You scoop all the cat poops, which is sick. I asked you to learn all the dance moves in the P. Diddy and Mace Been Around the World remix video and dance them with me. And you did. Dislikes. I do not enjoy being kissed in the middle of the grocery store. 13. How do you see us 10 years from now? Living is a mistake. If good things ever happen to me, I would say that some grief-stricken mutual friend of ours will be sobbing gently while digging up the yard of one of my many enemies to plant trees fed by our biodegradable burial pods so that he forever has to live his life in my shade. But everything is garbage, and the universe never gives me what I want. So, sadly, we'll still be alive, and I will definitely be luxuriating in the recliner you haven't let me buy, but I'm scheming to get anyway. That's a good foundation for a healthy marriage, right? Having a plush, comfy, rocking recliner that clashes with the house's current mid-century modern design, just show up on your doorstep and being like, shrug, when your wife objects. I mean, it's already here. We might as well watch an SVU marathon in it. Yo, I need a job. Dear Sir or Madam, I am writing to you regarding your company's customer service representative opening. I have been working as the client services director, which is a mostly fictional title, at an animal hospital for the last 14 years, and have developed substandard phone manners.